Hello, everyone, and welcome to another episode of Podnuts Pro. I am your host, Marvin B. Ladies and gentlemen, I want to thank you for watching. If you're watching live, if you're listening to this after the fact, thank you as well. And if you're listening on audio, Podnuts Pro is a podcast for techs. And basically, if you're an IT provider that is providing business support, we are a show that hopefully will help you with products and services from our vendors, stories and tips from other technicians, all in an effort to help you make your business better, stronger, and faster. So on today's show, I have two ladies who, this is going to be interesting. One you have known before, our good friend from Third Element Consulting, Don Sizer. Don, how are you?
Good. How are you?
I'm good. And we have a new guest on the show. However, she's not new to the industry. She is what I'm considering a podcast queen, Nancy Sabino from Sabino CompTech. Nancy, how are you?
Hello, hello. Thanks for having me on.
All right. So why don't we just start with how are things going? It's a weird COVID time. Some states are trying to open, some are not. Schools opening, schools are closing. How's it going for you guys?
Nancy, do you want to go first?
Sure. Well, we kids just started school about Wednesday, so that was fun this week trying to get them started virtually. They're not in school physically yet until September 8th here in Texas, or at least in some parts of Texas. So that's fun, and we're still working from home.
And Don up in PA.
So I think we've been in this probably from the very beginning. I know Texas didn't close down until after we did. So the kids are starting to go back to school here. They're actually going back for the most part. They're doing like an AB kind of thing here. So half the kids are going a couple days a week, half the kids are going the other couple days a week, and then nobody's going one day a week. It's kind of weird how they're doing it. Thankfully, my youngest has graduated and I don't have to deal with that. So, so there's that. we've been back in the office. Most of our clients are back in the office. So we're just at a different point in all of this. We have some clients that are doing the AB thing. We have some clients that are working from home. So, but a lot of them are back.
All right. And of course, here in Florida, we're kind of going back and forth, first place, second place with new tests and infections and all of that stuff. So we don't know what we're doing. And I'm sure if you pay close enough attention to the news, you'll find a Florida man screaming that they don't have to wear a mask. So that's how we are doing. Although, so my nephew just started working for me. He's 17, so he should be in school. And I don't really know exactly what their deal is, but I do know that he's doing a bulk of it virtually. And he's working for me today, but yesterday I found out he actually got locked out of a class because it was late. So apparently as the uncle, I have to have a chat with him now about staying in school or something like that.
Those are fun conversations.
Yes. All right. So we don't really have a true introduction here. Sometimes we just get going. But what I do want to do is, Nancy, since you are new to the show, can you introduce yourself for our listeners who may not know you and tell us about your company?
Yeah. So, like you said, I am Nancy Sabino. I am CEO of Sabino CompTech, version 2.0, I like to say. My husband and I started the company when we were 22 years old. And then we closed the first version of the company, which was a residential break fix, in 2015. And we transitioned within a month to fully managed services. And we've been doing that for 4 years now. And so that's a little bit about me. I'm a mom of two. I've got a 15-year-old, which is hard to believe for me, first year in high school, and a middle schooler, which who's turning 12 this year. So for my journey has been definitely growing a business while raising a family all at the same time at a very young age, which is kind of crazy.
Interesting. So Nancy, my research department, when they were telling me all the stuff we found about you, your company has actually gone through a, I don't know what you call it. You didn't change names. You didn't change numbers, but you kind of revamped, did a rebrand. What was that all about?
Yeah. So that's the transition that we did. So literally that's what I tell everybody. We, nothing is the same except for the business name, the phone number and the employees, some of the employees. We took the employees that we had in the residential shop and then we trained them and moved them over to service businesses. And really what it came down to for us was kind of realizing that our business model was not really helping who we wanted to help. And I think also being so young when we started, we kind of realized that who we were at the time when we initially started our business was not who we were 10 years later. And so that transition happened also because of where we were personally within our own careers and what we were wanting out of it and so on and so forth. So that's kind of why we started all of that. And the name stayed the same because it's our last name. And so there's some pride, I guess, in that. And then we couldn't think of a better name at the moment. So we were just like, okay, well, we're going to keep it the same.
All right. So, but you did a little bit better than I did when I chose my name. I chose my name thinking I would change it and never did. Now, when you say we in your business, so you, like Dawn, you and your husband both work in the business together.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. So my wife works in the business, but she doesn't have a fancy title like CEO or COO. But so we kind of all share that together. And I always ask Dawn about this. So let me ask you, how has that been?
We love it. So we are high school sweethearts. We've been together since we were 16. And there was some times where we worked apart, but this isn't the first time that we worked together. The very first company that we interned and worked at, that was Break Fix. That's when we kind of realized that we really enjoy working together and we're a great partnership just because he has strengths that I don't have and so on and so forth. So it definitely helps us with how we run the business.
All right. Dawn, any changes with you since you've had to work from home during the quarantine?
You know, there was a minor change. So not major change. When I say minor, I mean, like, we realized that being in the same office when we shared it at home was not a good idea. So I moved downstairs.
Okay.
Well, what was happening is we'd both be in meetings and we'd be in the same meeting and we're like echoing and doing all kinds of crazy things. And it was just getting absolutely silly. So I'd talk and then there would be a slight lag and then he'd hear it. It was like, this is just crazy. Trying to figure out, you know, who's talking when and what's going on. And it was like, you know what? I'm just going to go downstairs. We're all good. And he's like, I feel so bad. Like, I'm kicking you out of the office. I'm like, nope, honestly, I'm out. I'm good.
Wow. So let me ask this question. So my wife did not start with me in the business. She came along much later. And when she did, I did not have a real office. I should say I did have an office, but it was a separate townhouse. And we had an upstairs bedroom that was my office. And then the second bedroom was like a guest room. And then the entire downstairs was my tech area. So when she came on board, she actually shared my office space. And it was quite frustrating. We did not start out together. So it was hard to kind of lay those boundaries and stuff. Both of you either started together or fairly early on. So how did you set those boundaries?
We never had.
Is that your train, Dawn? Is that your train?
I have my own personal train. This is one that runs like a block off the office. So sorry. We've always had a home office that was, you know, both of us together. But in the office, we've never shared space. So it was weird to work from home. and be in the same space and trying to do the same things at the same time. And it was frustrating. So we had to adjust that a little bit.
When we started, it was out of our living room. So we shared the living room. We both had desks in the living room. And so that was not the best time for sure. And so when we moved to an office, I immediately said, I want my own office. And we had to deal with some hurt feelings in there. And it was like, you don't want to be around me. What's going on? Like, why do you need a separate office? And we had to have some conversations.
That was him saying that to you?
Well, both of us. Okay. I knew I wanted to leave, but I also felt bad. And so it was like, how do we still communicate in the same way, but have our own space? And I was definitely like, it's just to have conversations where both on the phone or having meetings, so on and so forth. It gets frustrating. It's like, shut up. Lower your voice.
I mean, I was to the point of like, I love you, but I'm going to love you from over there.
Over there. Yeah. So that's, we decided, okay, I was in my own office and he was in the tech space. And then when we moved to our second office, he got his own office space. And then it was like, oh my God, you have had this all along. This is amazing. I'm like, yeah, it is. It is quite amazing.
Mm. All right. So actually, I'm going to go ahead and announce this, Dawn. So you and I and our spouses, we're going to have date night.
We are. I'm so Wednesday. Excited for date night.
So we get to talk about all these types of issues and stuff. And so it should be very fun.
It's like the first real double date that we've had in, I don't know, months, like 6 or 8 months. This is like stupid fun. Like,
it's going to be interesting, isn't it?
Yeah, I know. We haven't been around people for like the longest time. So it's going to feel really good to get out.
And there will be adult beverages. So
there will definitely be adult beverages.
Although I have to drive home, so I have to be careful.
I don't. Mm-hmm. I feel bad for you.
Yeah. It's okay.
There's always Uber for sure.
There is.
Okay. Nancy, you don't know this, but my house is 1,000 feet from my office. So it's literally on the next block.
He
so
just has to stumble home.
If I have an issue getting from here to there, we're in serious trouble.
So then next week's Florida man is going to be Florida man ends up in ditch stumbling home from office.
1,000 feet away.
Yeah.
Well, it'll be interesting because they just so. Okay, we're going to go off topic right away. So my commute.
And you said I was the bad influence. It's not me.
You are. You brought up Florida man already. So my commute quadrupled over the last 2 weeks. So my housing development has a traffic revitalization plan that they just started where they're redoing all of the entrances into our neighborhood. And the main street that comes in, which is where my office is on the main road, and then two blocks back is our house, they're putting in this roundabout. So
I hate roundabouts.
Yes. Well, the problem was it was a weird deal because two ways there were stop signs and the other two there weren't. And so the people with the stop sign wouldn't stop, and neither were the people without the stop sign. So there was always issues going on. And the city wouldn't put in a four-way stop without doing a complete traffic study. It was ridiculous. It was like 2 years of going to the HOA, which we're not officially an HOA, but we have a volunteer HOA. That's another story. So they fought for this, and they were going to close the street and do all this. So they put in this roundabout. So for almost 2 weeks, that was closed. So the direct route from my office to my home was closed. So I had to go out the backside of the division around. It was like 5 minutes to get to my office. I was.
Oh my gosh. How did you survive it?
I was having a meltdown. I almost had to get gas at the end of the week. It was frustrating. Anyway. So what were we talking about?
That reminds me of, so we're working from home right now, and whenever we work from home, we tend to work a little later, which is frustrating sometimes. But that's my kids have gotten used to being like, it's 6 o'clock or 6:30, and they're like, oh, was there traffic on your way home? We're like, yes, that's exactly right.
Yeah, why was your toy on the stairs?
Yeah. And mine just shows up and he's like, dinner? Like, dinner?
All right. So let's try to get some tech in here before we go completely off base. Let's start with the fact. So both of you have pretty significant businesses that are on the upswing compared to a lot of businesses. And there's a bunch of elements that come into play because not only are you growing MSPs, you're both women owned, women led, which is part of a diversity discussion we can have. So let's kind of talk about what is kind of like your secret sauce right now for doing the business and growing the MSPs.
Oof.
Yeah. don't want to give it, do you?
Yeah, we hang on to the secret sauce. We don't tell anybody about that. So I don't know that there's, you know, everybody does things differently. Everybody has different strengths. Everybody has different weaknesses. I mean, there's no perfect storm of things that come together for an organization that's going to work exactly the same way in another one. So, you know, I can say that, you know, this is my secret sauce. And Nancy's like, hey, that sounds pretty cool, but that's not how we do it. And it works really well for us to do it a different way. So I don't want to say, you know, well, if you go out and do X, Y, Z, this is how it's going to work for you, because that's not necessarily true. So I think at the end of the day, you know, being true to yourself, being true to your clients, being, you know, who you are, that thing that makes your company and sets you apart from everybody else, that's your secret sauce. And it's going to be different for every single MSP, every single business, you know, whatever that case is, that's the secret sauce right there. So, I mean, for us, it's just how we approach how we do business. One of the things that we do that sets us apart is that we do some things that not some of the other people do. So instead of just, you know, hey, we're an MSP, we do these kinds of things, we also do things like disaster planning. We also do, you know, continuity planning. We do training. We do some other services that not everybody does. And some of those are part of our MSP model. So
how much of that do you think came from your built-in clientele? Because you've got a niche that a lot of others don't have. And
we do.
To deal with first responders, it's easy to sell them disaster recovery.
Yeah, it is, to an extent. I mean, it's all about the money. So at the end of the day, but, you know, do they want it? Yeah, they do. They need it. It's something that they all need for either compliance issues or for insurance issues or whatever the case might be for them. But yeah, I mean, that's an easier sell for us. But I think some of the other thing, though, too, is when you're dealing with, you know, a niche market, figuring out, again, that's that secret sauce, figuring out what your niche really wants, what they desire, and how to bring that to them. That's secret sauce right there.
And Nancy, when you guys revamped your business, was a lot of it because of the fact that you knew you wanted to change direction? I know you said that where you started wasn't where you were, but what made you make that change and turn it into what it is now?
Yeah. So at that time, when we first started our business, we were working for small businesses, but not in the same capacity that we started to learn that we could. And so as we were maturing within our business acumen, I would say, we started to realize that there was definitely a lot more that we could do. And it interested my husband a lot more, and it also interested me. So we kind of combined the technical side of what he was interested in and what he was learning, as well as my passion for business. And so that's kind of what led us to decide, okay, we don't want to do B2C, we want to do B2B. And not just that, but we want to be able to help them in a way where we are literally helping them plan for their business. So if they don't have someone that will help them, coach them in that way, then funny enough, we fill that role. And so that is very much like who we are, is definitely part of that secret sauce. I've realized that a large niche for us is actually women-owned businesses. So we have, I think it's about 80% of our clients are women-owned businesses. And then the rest of them are either female-led, like the office manager or someone on that high level that is making decisions is also a female. So for us, it was kind of like, oh, that's cool. That's where we naturally gravitated towards. And that's how we designed our platform. And so
that's actually really exciting. I haven't got at it from that angle. And I'm kind of jealous that I didn't think of that before. Like I should have. But I don't think we see that quite as much maybe in Pennsylvania as you do in Texas. We're that older mindset, the old boys club up here. It's a little bit different. I wish it wasn't, but it is. We do have a couple that are women led, and that's always exciting to see because it's very different and it's differently run. And it's kind of interesting to watch.
All right. So, Dawn, you made me go another direction. I had a question for Nancy, but I'll come back to it.
Sorry.
The fact that you said that you didn't think about that. So that I had a diversity discussion a while back, and that came up where women in the industry were finding it difficult to approach businesses because they were getting the pushback of, oh, you're a female. Do you really know tech? And I know Dawn and I have had this discussion that in a lot of cases, she knows a lot more tech than a lot of the guys. So let me start with you, Nancy, and then we'll come back to Dawn. When you run into that type of thing, how do you approach it? And what do you think the industry needs to do to help fix it?
Oh, I had to take some deep breaths here. This is a passion topic for me. And this has definitely happened to me over the course of my career. And quite frankly, not too long ago, I can tell you a story of a client who, they were bought out by a larger company and they put a new president in place. And this president wanted to meet with me. And that was one of his first questions was, how can I trust that your group is going to do their best job when you're a woman in IT? You just don't see that often. And I was like, first of all, I think my years of experience could answer that. And if you're not comfortable with that, then maybe that is your problem and not mine. Not in those words exactly. I was a little bit more finessed in the words, but it was essentially that, like, I don't think my gender has anything to do with how my brain works and my knowledge or skills. So, yeah. And he kind of laughed it off and was like, okay, I came back to the office and I told him, I don't know how long this is going to last. And it definitely turned out to be better than I thought because he kind of learned from dealing with me a little bit that it was like, okay, she knows what she's doing and we can develop this relationship, but it's definitely hard to have to prove yourself, time and time again, when I know if my husband were to have walked in that door, it would have not been a thought.
Hmm. Dawn, anything? I know we talk about this all the time, but go.
So, I mean, I've had those conversations. I think every woman in the industry has had that conversation. Marvin, I'm sure you've had that conversation from a different aspect of it, but the same conversation. Like, just because what you see in front of you is what you see, it doesn't mean that the brain is different from something, from someone else. And I know I've had, and even when I've bought cars, I mean, it's like, it doesn't matter. It's not the industry so much. It's just somebody else's mindset of what they're seeing. And it's their problem, not necessarily yours. Is there a way to fix it? I don't know. I mean, I've said some very blunt things in my life, and they're not always PC, and they're definitely not even PG-13. So we're not going to go there. But, one of the things, and I had this happen March timeframe this year, and I was at a conference and somebody had sat down next to me and I had spoken there and they were like, you don't belong here. And I was like, that's just like your opinion, man. Okay. So, and I think some of it too is if we as a gender, as a race, as whatever it is that we identify as, if we let it bother us and we don't push back, or if we just don't treat it like that's your problem, not mine, it will continue.
Yeah, for sure.
But that's just my opinion, man. So
well, I agree with that. And that's something that for me, I have definitely pushed back in that sense. Like, not just saying like my years of experience, but then also the realization of I don't have to justify anything to you. You can work with me or you can choose not to. That's your choice.
Yep.
But ultimately speaking, you will miss out because my company is badass. So.
So funny, you should have said earlier, Don, that I've experienced that. And the answer is, of course, yes. Obviously from a different perspective. And it's been interesting because in the last month or so since the George Floyd incident, I've had to actually explain things a lot differently because before then I really never paid it any mind or tried to downplay it. And I got to the point where I said, I can't anymore. And just to give you an example, there are lots of times where if we're on site and I've got people with me and the main point of contact for the office is not on site and people want to get direction, if we're moving equipment or we have to set stuff up or whatever thing, I could be standing right next to somebody. And just to give you an idea, I'm black, they're white. And the people will always turn to that person to say,
I wouldn't
hey,
have known.
Are
Marvin.
You, are you, hey, can you tell us, are you in charge? What do you, and it's like, they don't even think
yeah.
that the black man could be the owner. So we've had to deal with that as well. And it's interesting. And a lot of it, a lot of times it is perspective. It is what they're used to. So sometimes it's not their fault, but then sometimes it is.
So question for you on that. Is it worse in the South than it would have been in, you know, Ohio or Pennsylvania or New York, do you think?
So in Florida, it's probably, I'd say 50-50. There are pockets, you know, in Florida that are South. And there, of course, you know, we have all the blue hairs from up North. So it's not as bad. Now, I did spend 3 years in Carolina where it was absolutely horrible. So it depends, I think, on where you are. But in terms of, you know, I'm trying to say this delicately. Let's just say this. If I talk to somebody on the phone before I meet them, it's an awakening when they see me. Does that make sense?
Mm-hmm. I mean, I can't fool that one. So, and I'm pretty sure Nancy can't either. They kind of know what they're getting.
Right.
ahead of time. But yep. Occasionally, yeah. Or, oh, I didn't realize that you were the CEO, you know, or something along those lines. Or, oh, we're getting a girl today. Who knew? You know, right. that I think that's the biggest one. And it's not like, oh no, this is going to go horribly awry. It's just like, surprise. Mm-hmm. And I'm okay with surprise. Surprise is fine. The bad surprise, not fine. But I don't think I've had that for quite a while, probably a good 15 years. So.
Yeah, surprise is good. And I think, you know, the discussions I've had in the last few weeks have been more of an education. I think a lot of people just assume that once they get to know me that, oh, things are all peachy and rosy. And it's been interesting to let them know that, no, it still happens. And, mm-hmm. you know, we can't just, you know, pretend like it's not still happening. And I know that there are lots of women groups out there, women in tech, and you guys have a loud voice for women. Blacks in tech isn't a very loud voice. So it's just been an interesting thing I've learned over the last few weeks.
Yeah, I bet.
I have a question for you, Marvin. Is there any part of your business that has been built around that fact, the reaction that you may get, or anything like that?
The short answer is no. And in the very beginning, when I started the business, and I've done this not with just my business, but in everything, I've never wanted to highlight the fact that I'm Black. It was just something I never did. It was something where I want you to see me for my talents and for what I can do. And that was it. So I never went after small business loans for, you know, minorities. I never did projects. In fact, I would steer away from them. So some of that's my fault, because there were opportunities probably to enhance that and to focus on that and to highlight it. But it's something where now I think maybe I could have done a little differently. But no, there's been nothing that is focused on the business in any way. What about you, as a both as a female and a Latina?
Yes. So because we had started our business so young, originally speaking, we hit our age. And for a very long time, we would not tell people how old we were, because we felt like if they knew how young we were, they wouldn't listen to us the same way. And so when I turned 30, I kind of had this paradigm shift, in the sense that, like, I think just the added idea of, like, now I'm an adult. But
I've made it now.
I'll be respected differently now. But that thought, or that idea alone, allowed me to think about it in the sense of, I'm hiding a piece of who I am. Instead of being proud of the fact that I'm a business owner at 22, I was hiding it. And so when I turned 30, I kind of decided I'm not going to hide a single part of who I am anymore. And I'm going to be upfront about it. And if you don't like it, you don't want to do business with me because of it, then you can make that decision even before we talk, because you'll know who I am and what I'm about before we even get to any kind of conversation. So if you're not okay with that, then that's okay. It's like dating almost, you know, and you don't, if there's certain bits and pieces that you don't like about somebody, you don't even have to find that out, because I'm upfront about it. Like, That's how I decided to go about it. And down to the tattoos, I decided I'm not hiding them anymore. I'm not, especially being in Texas, it was definitely a struggle to kind of think, do I want to pursue that or not? But the mindset of, I'm going to live and breathe every part of who I am, in business and in life. And that way, it's just much better for me. I feel much better about it. And the business that I get is much better because of it.
Interesting. I was going to ask you about your tattoos, but let me tell you why I want to ask.
Why?
So my business, so I have the back half of my landlord's building, which they were a photography studio on the other side, but they kind of shut that down and moved it to another location. And so they started renting out that side of the business to a tattoo parlor.
Oh, cool. Well, you need to go get one now.
No. let's not even address that up front. No.
Yeah, we're going to address. So anybody that's watching, we're going to pool some cash to get Marvin a tattoo. We'll get a GoFundMe going for the tattoos.
Let me explain how this works. So when I was younger, I got an earring. My best friend talked me into getting an earring because it was cool, the thing to do, right? Michael Jordan had an earring. When I turned 40, that earring went away. That was my age to say, okay, I'm done. So nothing happens to this body anymore. No tattoos, no earrings. You see, I don't have jewelry. I have a wedding ring I have to take off because I play with it, and it makes noise when it hits the table. So that's my only piece of jewelry, but there will be no tattoos.
He says that now.
Right. How much money does it take to convince you? Donate now, buddy.
So if anybody wants to sponsor this show for $1 million a year. We might consider it. So here's the thing. So tattooing has been kind of a big deal for many years now. So I don't see where people would be offended by the tattoos. Although now that you say Texas, I think I get it. Maybe not. Because I would see people accepting of tattoos more than a black man. So had tattoos really been an issue for you?
Sometimes. Okay. Yeah, in some situations. And I think before I blasted my picture showing my tattoos on the website, I think it was a little bit more of an issue when I would show up to meetings and it was like, oh, you are tattooed. And so it was, I've had to then kind of decide, do I want to continue showing up with showing my tattoos, or do I hide them during business meetings? And I came to the conclusion of, I'm not going to hide them because I don't want to kind of do like a switch on somebody. And if they don't agree with tattoos and that's something that for them is like a break it, make it or break it kind of like a deal breaker, then I want to be upfront about it. But yeah, I've definitely had some pushback on it. And then there's been situations where there hasn't been. I've shown up to places and wearing long sleeves and people were like, oh, I wanted to see your tattoos. And it was like, oh, cool. But so it's really hit or miss. I can say in the last few years, it's definitely been a lot more accepting than it was previous to that. And then where the city that I live in, Houston, outside of Houston, it's a very conservative city. And so it's not so much business meetings and things like that, but it's definitely walking around. And I get treated differently based on what I'm wearing. So if I'm wearing my professional clothing with tattoos or not, I'm still treated as a professional. But if I'm not, like if I have a t-shirt on and jeans, then I'm treated like, I don't even know. It's not the same.
Different. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So I can tell you for sure there's some bias around tattoos and how you show up with them.
All right.
For us, it was, we pace match mirror our clients for the most part. And a lot of our clients have uniform code. So their uniform code for the longest time was nothing can be showing. So they can have them, but it can't be shown if they're in their uniform. So we had to pace match mirror for that. So most of us that have them, they're in places that you can't see them. So for me, mine are all over my back.
Okay. So let's take a step back for a newbie to the tattoo world. What was that phrase you used? Pace match?
Pace match mirror.
What is that?
So you want to keep pace with your client, match what they're doing, and mirror it so that you're not either too far above where they are, too far below where they are. So if my client is wearing, you know, suit and tie, then we do something very similar. If my client is in jeans and sneakers, we do something very similar.
Okay. I thought that was a tattoo lingo.
No. No.
Nothing, I have no tattoos. Exciting,
sorry. So the biggest thing with tattoos, and Nancy can tell you this too, is like as soon as you have one, they're addictive.
Oh, yeah.
And then you want another one and then another one. And then once you get to that point, then you're like, so where's the next one going to go? And what's it going to be? And then you take, you know, 6 months to a year to plan it out. And then you have to find the exact artist that specializes in that particular thing. And then you go have it done. And then it's like, it's art. You're wearing art. Around.
Yeah, I can say so this at the beginning of this year, I gave myself the goal of for every new client that I am able to enroll in our program, then I will get a tattoo as a celebratory win, I guess. So I hope I run out of space.
Okay.
I'm not going that far.
That's commitment.
Yeah. So I already have plans as to the empty sleeve and filling space on the one that I already have. And so
all right.
I'm definitely going all in.
So here's a question I have. So they've been here, I guess, going on 3 weeks. The fumes have got to go. So they're trying to tell us that it's just the build out and their, you know, it's their epoxy that they're doing and stuff. But in a normal tattoo parlor, how are the fumes when they're doing the inking?
I didn't realize there were, I mean, you get a little bit of like alcohol whiff from like the cleaner and the soap and the alcohol and stuff like that. But there's no like fumes unless they're doing lasering, and then you can smell that a little bit. But
lasering?
Tattoo removal.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, I don't know about.
I don't think that's tattooing that you're smelling.
Listen, I'm not going over there. This is going to sound horrible. So I had to go over there like their second day here because their network wasn't running. And I ended up selling him a switch. And they're like, oh, you can do all of our networking and stuff. I'm like, I don't think so. We're neighbors. So I treat business neighbors like family and friends. We don't mix the two. But every time they've come over, they're... So we had to put signs on the door. Mask required.
Yeah.
Because none of them have masks. So,
I mean,
we're not going over
there.
You
think that would be a thing?
I don't know. I've never been inside one, and, you know, I don't plan on going over there.
So, again, we come back to that. I'm pretty sure that's where, like, the next Florida Man headline's coming from. So.
Florida Man gets tattoo. Is that what it's?
Florida Man gets COVID from non-wearing mask people.
Tattooing.
tattoo shop. Yes. Yeah.
Well, they had to come over. So part of the fumes problem is we have a shared door because part of their space really should have been ours if they divided the building in half. But we only have like 3/4 of the backside of the building, which is sufficient for what I have right now. And when I went to talk to the landlord about renting the rest of that space, it was going to double my rent. And it was going to be like a big conference room, a podcast studio, and all of this stuff. And I'm like, I don't make enough money to do that. So we have a shared door, and part of the fumes was coming through that door. So they came over and sealed that and do all that stuff. And
I stand by my, that's not tattoo.
All right.
No.
So maybe I'll go over and I'll get a swatch. Do they do swatches? Will they give you a swatch of like
skin? Things? What?
I don't know. How do you go in and say, I want this? Or don't they have, you know, stuff where they say, here's all of our designs. Don't they have standard designs?
Flash? Yeah.
It depends.
What's it called?
Flash.
Flash? Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah. So it depends on what kind of tattoo place it is.
Oh, we know what kind it is.
So then, yes. No. So the tattoo shop I go to, they are custom only. So they don't have any kind of examples. So you have to bring the art that you want to them. And then they do whatever they do with it to make it tattooable.
So if you do that, how do you know if the artist is good enough to do what you want? I mean, I know you said it takes a while to research, but how do you...
So typically you find somebody that does it in a style that you like, and then they'll draw something out for you. Wait, hey, I want XYZ.
What's a style? It's drawing, right? You're not talking about, you know, faux painting versus oil painting versus...
Yeah, I mean, you can be, though. Yeah.
Really?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Oh.
Yeah, for sure. So okay. The same artist that has done this arm will not be the one that does my black and white work that I want on the other arm. Because he's not a specialist in that. but his business partner is. So I will be going to the other artist for that.
Okay, so put that up again for me.
Wait. No, okay. That's not tattooed. Here we go.
Okay, so
that's part of it.
All right, so that, and then you're talking about your next style is black and white.
Mm-hmm.
What's the difference? Because because it sounds like we're not talking just colors.
No. So on my arm.
If you use green, it doesn't matter if it's black.
I'm terrible at this. So I have realistic flowers on my arm.
Okay.
Some of them. And so that's a style.
Are those pot plants?
No, they're not pot plants. Otherwise, we'd be talking about other fumes again.
Yeah, right?
No, they are flowers, different kinds of flowers, state flowers.
Okay.
As well as birth flowers, birth month flowers that represent my family. So that's what's on that arm. And then I do want black and white work on the other side. So that's
okay.
Gonna be
so
more.
Now what's the black and white work?
So that's going to be more representative of what I like. So I have like this whole design of where it's going to be books that fly into space almost. And
uh-oh.
Uh-oh.
We lost her.
There
she is. Okay. So all we heard was books flying into space.
Yep, books flying into space. And then basically in space, they're being like an imagination almost. So being features of different books and shows and things like that I like or love.
Okay. And why is that called black and white work?
Well, it's going to be a little bit more intricate. So more smaller detail. And so because of that, I wanted it in black and white.
So think pen and ink. Like if you see a pen and ink drawing, it would be more like that instead of like
a painting.
Painting, yeah.
Okay. Dawn, what do you have?
So same kind of thing. Like I went to one guy to do Celtic knotwork because it's very intricate. It's the way that it's done. It's the way that it's drawn and shaded and, you know, that kind of thing. So I have that down my spine. And I do not recommend that, by the way.
That's what I was gonna say. That hurts.
It was not fun.
Okay. Is it because it was near the spine or because it's the Celtic knotwork?
The less fat you have over any part of what's getting tattooed, so anything that's close to bone is very touchy.
Okay.
So you have to be careful with that. It gets pretty painful. And then I have some other stuff that's color, but it's just a stylized piece. My husband and I both have a dragon and a dragonfly together, and it's just part of who we are as people, and we had that put on our shoulders. So I have that all over the back part of my shoulder.
But how is dragon and dragonfly part of you as people? Does that like mean something?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes, it does. No. Okay. I mean, no, everybody has things that they identify with in some way, shape, or form. And those are just some things that we identify with.
All right. I'll ask you that on another show.
Yeah.
All right. Anything I really need to know about the tattoo parlor moving in next door?
That they're probably doing more than tattooing over there. Okay. But I think you already know that.
We were going to keep the legal aspects out of the show.
We just said we wouldn't curse. That's all.
Oh. So speaking of going off course, both of you have been on other podcasts that I've heard. There's Women in Tech and an IT for Whiskey.
Yes.
How are those?
The Women in Tech one, I mean, I've done one with CRN. That one was fun. Just a whole bunch of women getting together, like this is how things are going, this is what's going on, you know, that kind of thing. IT for Whiskey goes off the rails about as fast as this one does. Plus,
yeah, but
you're
that's aided with the drink.
It is. It's aided with the drink. I'm not gonna lie. I know the last time I was on, I was drinking Balvenie Caribbean Cask, which was, it's phenomenal. So it's a really good scotch that's aged in rum barrels. So you get that little bit of burn from the scotch, but then it smooths it out because of the rum. So it's really, really good. So, and I'm a cheap date. So about halfway through my glass, I was feeling pretty good. And like I said, it went off the rails pretty quickly. But I mean, Nancy was on too, so she can tell you that Craig and Joe and Myron are just phenomenal people. And, you know, it's just, they're good people to talk to. They're good people to hang out with. They have a ton of knowledge in the field. And it's just a fun podcast to be on. I mean, I've done MSP 360, which was the Cloudberry one. We talked about neurodiversity there. Done a couple of the other ones for CRN, and it all depends on, you know, who you're on with and what you're talking about, and whether or not you're scripted or whether you're, you know, not on script, or you're just, you know, completely off the rails the way that we are here. So, and sometimes it's a lot more fun to not be scripted, because the conversation flows a little bit better, and you kind of decide, you know, where your talking points are and what you're stronger talking about, and you can kind of carry the conversation that way too.
Well, the reason I asked is because I liked those shows that you guys were on, and I think the last one I listened to, I listened to two, Nancy, but your IT for Whiskey. So here's what I was going to ask you. So they kept trying to ask you about short-term and long-term goals, and you kept diverting them and never answered the question.
That's a good question there. So next week, no. this is funny. Not funny, but so we typically have a 1 year goal setting meeting, my husband and I, and we lay out our short-term goals for the year. And then we typically do a long-term goal. For when we first started, we thought, okay, 10 years is too far in the future to plan. And so we cut that short and did a 5-year long-term plan. And now we're at the point where, we're like, okay, no, we need to go back to the drawing board and get back to the, what is life going to be like in 10 years? And so that's actually something that we have planned to do here shortly. So I can't really speak to the long-term goals in the sense of what we want, but I can definitely say I have an idea. And so that's probably why I was avoiding it during that show.
All right. Because I got a sense. Go ahead, Don.
Oh, sorry. Have you gone through the book called Traction yet?
Yes. Yeah. Okay.
She talked about that. You should listen to her podcast, Dawn.
Good. Yeah, I know she did. I just, not everybody, like, they mention it, but they've never actually been, like, through the process, right, and working on rocks and doing what they need to do to actually get through it. So I know that helps a lot with long-term planning, and at least that way it keeps your momentum going all the time.
Yeah. And that's something that we have implemented. And so we're doing the short-term goals, but it was that 5-year goal, the long-term goal that we just were like, we don't know. We don't know what we're thinking for that. And I think, so I hired an executive coach this year, and I think a lot of it, working with her, I've realized that a lot of it has to do with awareness and exposure. So I come from a single family or single parent home, and my mom, she cleaned houses as I grew up. So it was something that for me, even being a CEO and a business owner, it wasn't even a thing growing up. And so realizing that there's bigger and there's more that you can do with your life than what you saw as a kid has been an impact in how I'm thinking about goals now. And so realizing, like, I can't make myself small just because of what I knew growing up. I have to be able to see what is possible so that I can know what's possible for me. And so that's where I'm at now, and why the idea of 10-year goal being more of a reality than what I was thinking previously.
So you also mentioned another book. Which one was it? It was one of the Mike Michalowicz books.
Oh, yes. I love Mike. I'm saying it like if I know him, but I don't. But
I've met him.
Hey, you if can you're say listening, it. Mike. I'm a huge fan. The Pumpkin Plan was where I kind of started. And I had read that book after we made our transition and realized that our business is very much like the Pumpkin Plan, that journey. And then when he came out with Profit First, that is one of the books that I was like, okay, I need to implement this, because it also reflected some of the ideas that we had and how we managed our money. And so, my accountant was actually a Profit First, certified. And so he helped us implement that as well. So that has been a game changer, I think, in how we spend money, ultimately speaking.
Just writing these down because I'm going to put these in the show notes with links so that people can get them and Traction. So, Don, it sounds like you also went through the Traction book.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yep.
Implement a bunch of stuff from there.
Yes. Yeah. And it's not something you get to stop pretty much ever.
Right.
So, like, once you're, I think you read it as, you know, as a leader and think, oh, this sounds like a fantastic idea. And you're like, we're going to do this. And then you realize this is a lot of work. and then suddenly you're doing the whole, okay, so yeah, I'm doing it, but I need everybody to do it, because you don't get to just not have everyone in the organization on board. So as you start to implement it, it kind of, you know, rolls down to even, you know, the very lowest guy on your totem pole. In fact, I've got one guy, you know, reading, you know, what is EOS right now? So that's, it's just a part of who we are. It's a fundamental piece of who we are and what we do and how we do it.
All right. Do you have a business coach as well? Because Nancy said she did.
I do not, surprisingly. I usually call Joe or Craig or Myron when I need something crazy.
Unofficial like, coaches?
I did. Like, or I'll call them and be like, I did a thing. And they're like, what did you do? Like, I did this. Like, all right, that was okay. Did you try this? Yeah, I did. Okay. Maybe do this. Okay. I haven't done that yet. Okay, cool. And so I think we use peers a little bit more often than we use a business coach. I've been approached by a couple of them. I haven't found one that I've really resonated with yet. I think that's probably why we haven't done it. There's a couple around here that are, they're good. There's nothing wrong with them. Trying to remember who we were looking at. I know the guy's name, but he's part of like this system kind of thing that they do. And there's a bunch of them that do that. Right. And they all seem nice. It's just not, I don't know. I'm just not buying in yet.
All right. So I've gone with peers mostly. I probably, not that I'm completely against a business coach, but I just, the whole idea of paying somebody to tell me what to do, I feel like I shouldn't have to do that. I should be able to do it and figure it out on my own and have my own motivation. However, one thought that has come up, it came up last year, and nobody's done it as far as I know, that the whole idea of whether it's a peer group or an accountability group, going through one of these books together. So for instance, the Pumpkin Plan, which I know that there was a group that kind of made a book club about it, but they didn't keep each other accountable to any changes that they were making. So that was something I was wondering if either of you guys had run across a situation where you've had peers keep you accountable by going through either one of these books or one of these programs together.
I have not, but I kind of like the idea of that. I mean, that seems like a good idea. Maybe, you know, hey, we've all done this. Maybe we should do that.
I have. And I think for me, it started off, in 2015, right before we made all the transitions that we did, I, was part of the Goldman Sachs 10,000 Small Business Program. And so that kind of helped to instill the idea that we need additional help and support, beyond, ourselves and our business partners, and maybe peers where, so for me, I have a roundtable that I meet with on a regular basis, that was part of my cohort during Goldman Sachs. And so we have done a lot of things together so that we could not just help each other with business problems, but then also hold each other accountable. And we've gone through the gamut together, like having a facilitator to being self-facilitating to now having, because of COVID, we're having smaller groups quicker and closer together while we get through this together. And so we've done things like that where we've read certain books together, or we're reading different books, but implementing, talking about like, how are we implementing what we're reading and things like that. So that for me has been a game changer. And now I'm a firm believer of a peer group within your industry is good, is powerful. A peer group outside of your industry is powerful. And then having mentors that can help guide you, as well as for me, there's a twist with my coach in the sense that she's not just an executive coach, but she's specifically an executive coach for women with anxiety. And so that is me. I have anxiety, and I've dealt with it most of my, if not all of my life. And so realizing that in order for me to get to where I want to be, I have to overcome that. And so that has been tremendously helpful with how I become a leader, or how I am a leader, despite of having anxiety and so on and so forth. So all of those to me have been important structures for my business and how I run it.
All right. So just as a point of reference for everybody watching or listening, that was not on the script. So all of this stuff, this could be a whole different show talking about the peer groups, the executive coaches, all of that stuff. And Nancy, the whole, you know, I had on here on my notes to ask you about the Goldman Sachs decision, but I think we're going to save that and have you come back and do another show with us. Is that okay?
Yeah, absolutely.
All right. Before I move on, Don, did you have anything to add after Nancy's soliloquy?
No,
there?
I mean, there's so much that we could dive into with all of that. I mean, anxiety as a CEO, I think that's like a prerequisite, honestly. Like, how does imposter syndrome is another thing that you can talk about. I think that's probably where half of our anxiety comes from. That white knuckle feeling that we all do 24/7 of, I have no idea what we were doing next, but I guess I'll figure it out as we go. But the reality of the situation is that's what a leader does.
Right.
And like I said, that's a whole show in and of itself. So
all right.
We'll leave it go with that.
Well, I've made notes, and we're going to come back to them at some point. So I'll have you one or both back on, and we'll dive into those.
Yeah, absolutely.
What we'll do now is I'm going to have you guys gather your thoughts for a fan favorite section, Florida Man versus the World. And while you do that, I'm going to acknowledge a couple of people that popped into the chat. I did not acknowledge them at the time. But Adam Kessler, a friend of mine, made a comment when we were talking about my getting an Uber. Is that... when Don made the comment about falling into a ditch, Adam said, knowing Marvin, he'll stumble into a ditch and find a pile of money. And that would be interesting. That'd be nice. And Chris Webb had to make a comment about the fact that I still had an earring in my 30s. Yes, I did. And literally on my 40th birthday is when I took it out. So. That's what I did.
The next level of adulthood.
That's right. Yeah. That, and then I lost my wedding ring. So that was fun.
Oh, I bet that went well.
It did. So
I can talk about that next week.
Yes. All right. So Florida Man versus the World. Basically, to let you know, Nancy, this is a segment where Florida Man has become a national sensation. Basically, you can type in Florida Man in Google with a date, and you will find some crazy, whacked out story about something that Florida Man did, said, other crazy things. So what we've done is You guys are not from Florida, so I challenge you to find a Florida man story for your city to rival the Florida man story that I have. So do you guys have your stories?
I don't. Let me do a quick Google.
It's totally cool. I have two, so I can take up some time while you Google. So there, I have one that's kind of weak sauce. So we're going to go with that one first. So Pennsylvania man has called in a gas problem at the local Taco Bell.
Okay. That's...
I said it's a little weak sauce.
Yeah. I mean, we need a drum roll for that or something?
No, it's not even good. So here's the real one, and this one's pretty good. So Erie homeowner, Erie PA, it's a place, finds naked man inside his home drinking milk while singing.
Nice.
Right?
Yeah. That rivals the story we had a couple months ago of the Florida man that was in the house sucking somebody's toe.
Yeah, I don't know enough to look to see if the story says what he was singing. It doesn't really say.
And was he on key?
No, it doesn't say. Just found a naked man singing and drinking milk in his kitchen. Sitting on the floor drinking milk. Yeah, that's all I got. Yeah.
All right, Nancy, found one yet, or you want me to go?
I found one, but it's from a year ago. So I'm like, okay, I need to find something else. But maybe that's not bad. So this one says, I lost it. Galveston man threatens family and stabs cat 12 times while 4-year-old fires an AK-47.
Oh, that's nice.
Yeah. Poor cat.
Wow. And so lots of questions there.
Yeah.
Why stab the cat? Sure. And how does a 4-year-old get their hands on the AK-47?
Oh, it's Texas.
Oh, okay. I'm sorry. Doesn't every 4-year-old have an AK?
At least one.
Well, it's better than that. Was this Pennsylvania? No, probably. It was. No, the story the other day about the teacher that was doing your virtual class. And no, it was Texas. I'd have to find it. It wasn't a Florida story, so I really didn't pay attention. But a teacher doing a virtual class had their school called the police because she could see a gun in the background, and it really was a Red Ryder BB gun.
BB gun? Well, I mean, shoot your eye out.
And so the cops showed up at this house to find out if this kid really had guns because this teacher called it in because of the virtual schooling.
I mean, the article had to end with, you'll shoot your eye out with that thing, kid. Yeah. Like, it had to.
So my Florida story, and this is not going to be as good as all the others. And the reason it's not is because I actually know the law firm that this person works for.
Oh, no.
I actually did an assessment for them years ago. They weren't a continuous client, but I did do work for them. I did put the link in the chat for people to look it up, but it's basically lawyer arrested for DUI after saying she was friends with The Rock and demanding pizza at jail. And basically, a Florida lawyer led police on a high-speed chase that resulted in a crash and her being forced out of the car at gunpoint. And so as she was getting arrested, she was shouting obscenities at deputies and began to name off famous actors like Dwayne The Rock Johnson, Owen Wilson, and Ryan Reynolds. And when they asked why she tried to flee, she explained that she was scared. But then once she got to the police station, she began repeatedly asking the officers to go out for pizza.
And, I mean, how drunk do you have to be before that becomes a thing?
I was just wondering that. Yeah.
And so she was recently appointed partner at this law firm. So glad they're not a client, or else I'd have to deal with it. But so when she was reached for a comment, she told the journal, "My comment is just that I'm effing innocent. How about that?"
Okay.
I'm sorry.
I wonder if she got pizza, though.
I mean, I kind of do, too, because, you know, you get to a certain point where you kind of have to have, you know, the grease and the nasty to, like, combat the alcohol.
Yeah, I mean, you got to come down somehow, right? It's always the munchies some way. So, oh, my goodness gracious. Oh, wait, here we go. While Sandra, I said her name. She did not get her pizza. But she did receive a multitude of charges, including felony fleeing, eluding police, misdemeanor driving under the influence, refusing to accept a citation, obstruction, and a felony drug possession. And the drug possession comes from a pack of gummy worms allegedly infused with marijuana found inside a purse in the car.
Wow.
So. You want to challenge Florida Man? Step your game up.
Yeah, I got nothing for that.
Is she a defense lawyer?
One could only hope.
Yeah.
That would create secondary Florida Man story.
Especially if she decides to defend herself, right?
Well, that's what I'm thinking. Like, Florida woman defends herself.
Yeah.
Meanwhile, gets charged while eating gummies in court, you know?
Oh, my goodness gracious. All right, ladies. So thank you very much for a wonderful Friday afternoon podcast. We started to lose some people leaving for lunch, but I think that went pretty well.
It was fun. Thanks for having me back.
All right. Nancy, how did it feel?
It was awesome. I really enjoyed this.
All right. So we're going to have you
off the topic or podcasts are better in my eyes. So
of course. Of course, we talk enough tech to get, you know, business in there, but we got to talk about real life too. So Don knows that.
Yeah.
Hey, speaking of, Don, did you buy that house yet?
No.
All right. Oh, that looks like tells me there's a story there.
We can talk about it Wednesday.
Okay. All right. Ladies and gentlemen, Don Sizer, Third Element Computing, and Nancy Sabino, Sabino Comp Tech, joining me today. Ladies, thank you very much, and hope you all had some great, interesting insights on how to run your business from two powerhouse women in technology. And look forward to doing it again in the future. And I do want to, I have a new thing I want to show off here. So if you want to follow Podnuts, you can go over to podnuts.com. That's where the shows are listed. You can check all not only Podnuts Pro, but some of the other great shows on the Podnuts Network.
I feel like I should go, you know.
That's right. Point down. And you can also check us out on YouTube and the Facebook. Just basically search for Podnuts Pro. And I want to thank everybody for downloading and subscribing to the show. Tell your friends about us, and we'll be back very, very soon with another show helping you to run your business better, stronger, and faster. But until then, holla.